Frank Muir goes into education and investigates the humour of the profession with the help of Alfred Marx.
A school inspector was investigating a junior school in Lancashire, and he thought he'd test the children's powers of observation. Right, he said, now how old do you think I am? 42, said the little boy at the back. Good gracious, you're right. How did you know that? Well, my brother's 21 and they say he's half daft. An attractive young schoolmistress was clearing up her books after the day's lessons when she noticed that one of her 8-year-old pupils was staying behind as if he had something to say to her. Yes, what is it, Jimmy?
Please, miss, I'm in love with you, miss.
The teacher was startled and touched and didn't quite know what to say. Jimmy went on.
Please, miss, will you marry me, miss?
So the teacher explained very gently, now listen, Jimmy, there's a great difference in our ages. I mean, one day when you're grown up, you will meet someone your own age and you'll really want to marry her. And anyway, I don't want to get married yet, and when I do, I too will want someone more my own age. I'll want a man, you see. I don't want a child.
Don't worry, Mr. Jimmy, we'll be very careful.
Father returned home from work one day to find his wife very agitated and his little boy crying. And he said to his wife, what's wrong? He said, it's that school teacher. She said to our boy, she said, all right, who wrote Hamlet? And he said, please teacher, it wasn't me. And she hit him. So I went straight up to that school and I said, now look here. My boy's not a liar. If he said he didn't write it, he didn't write it. So the father said, that's what you said, was it? That's what you said to the teacher, was it? What you should have said was, all right, he wrote it, but he won't do it again. A little boy comes back from his first day at school and his mother says, what did you learn? Hardly anything. We've got to go again tomorrow.
Alfie, stand up. Now tell me, yeah? Who killed Thomas Becket?
I may not be very bright, but I'm not grassing on anybody.
Man called on his friend and said, my word, that's an intelligent-looking dog at your feet. And he said, it certainly is. It goes to university. He said, really? He said, what's it studying? He said, it's studying foreign languages. Good Lord, he said to the dog, come along then. Say something in a foreign language. And the dog said, meow.
The educational profession, like most others, is happily abused in the cause of humour. The fact that we've all been through the educational process gives us the itch to mock teachers and sort of get even. I suppose we're still amazed that they can no longer give us 100 lines for telling jokes about them. The teacher's cause isn't helped much by remarks like George Bernard Shaw's famous, he who can does, he who cannot teaches. We should have nothing but admiration for anyone who faces 40 adolescent thugs in a small room without an armed guard. Not even a meowing dog. But it's the usual thing. You make fun of what you once held in awe, or still do hold in awe. As H.G. Wells put it,
human history becomes more and more a race between education and catastrophe.
And Mark Twain wrote,
soap and education are not as sudden as a massacre, but they're more deadly in the long run.
Because education isn't only the job of teachers, it's also the job of parents. A fact which parents rather like to overlook if their children don't turn out as they want them to. Then it's all the teachers' fault. The children themselves are fairest. They blame their parents and teachers equally. Sir Richard Steele wrote,
the truth of it is, the first rudiments of education are given very indiscreetly by most parents.
And John Dryden,
by education most have been misled, so they believe because they so were bred. The priest continues what the nurse began, and thus the child imposes on the man.
Good home upbringing is a vital part of education, and those who lack it are forced to find out how to behave by consulting those who enjoyed it. Like this lady who wrote to the Evening Standard.
We are having a couple to dinner next week who are very well connected, and I'm a little nervous. Is it correct to watch the telly both before and after dinner?
A good home upbringing would have told the good lady the right way to behave. You watch the telly during dinner. As well as before and after. And here's another hint on etiquette from a letter published in the Old Picture Post.
People who find it necessary to vomit whilst in a railway carriage should discreetly use their hats. This would come naturally to anyone properly brought up.
Properly brought up is very apt, isn't it? It's the parents' responsibility, you see. But eventually the time comes when the children can be packed off to a playgroup or nursery school. And from then on, the responsibility is at least shared. Mind you, the parents pay for their relief by having a house full of egg boxes painted to look like cotton reels. Cotton reels painted to look like egg boxes. And large sheets of paper painted to look like nothing known in nature. But it's an important step for children. At their first school, they learn the principles of learning, the application of logic to a problem.
There were two little girls at a play school talking about their teacher.
She's jolly nice, isn't she, says one. I wonder how old she is. I don't know, says the other, but we can find out. How? By looking inside her knickers. Why? Well, inside mine it says 3 to 5 years.
I've seen it. Inside mine, it says medium 34. So rather flattering. But for the definitive comment on nursery schools, we should consult a teacher. In this case, Joyce Grenfell.
Children, now it's time to go home, so let's finish our tidying up, shall we? And then we can get our hats and coats on. And we might hurry a little, I think, because some of our mummies are here already. We mustn't keep him waiting. Billy won't be long, Mrs. Binton. He's on hamster duty. Now, let's see if we can't all help each other, shall we? Janie, I said help each other. Help Bobby to carry that chair, but don't pin him up against the wall. We're having a go at our good neighbour policy, Mrs. Binton, but it isn't always quite... Neville, dear, off the floor. Don't lie about like that. And Sydney, stop painting, please. Well, because it's time to go home. Well, you shouldn't have started another picture, should you? What is it this time? Another blue man. Yes, so it is. Well, all right, one more paintbrush full of blue paint and then stop, right? We don't think he is very gifted, Mrs. Binton, but I think it's important to encourage any form of creativity. You know, it might lead somewhere. We have to hope. George! George, what did I ask you not to do? Well, don't do it. Sydney, don't wave that paintbrush about like that because you'll splash somebody. Look out, Dolores. Sydney. It's all right, Dolores, dear. You're not hurt. It's only a nice soft paintbrush. But I think you'll have to have a little wash before you go. Well, because you've got rather a blue face. Oh, cheer up. It was an accident. He didn't mean to do it. No. Sydney. I saw you deliberately put that paintbrush up Dolores's little nostril. That's a jolly good shot. Well, I'm not going to discuss it with you. Now, go and say you're sorry to Dolores right away, and then come back and put away your things. Oh, Hazel, you are my helper, aren't you? That's right. Get all the chairs in a nice straight row for me, and you help her, Neville. That's right. And thank you, Dickie, for closing the cupboard door for me. Get the chairs nice and... Dickie! Is there somebody in that cupboard? Well, open it quickly. Who is in there? Peggy, dear, what are you doing inside our toy cupboard? Well, you won't find any mouses in there. No, dear, that's where we keep the toys, you see. Mouses, they only go where there's food kept, and we don't keep any food in our toy cupboard. When did you hid it a bicky in there? Every day. Well, perhaps we have got mices. No, I don't want you to look, dear. You get your coat on. There's a good girl, and I'll look later. And Dickie, come here. Look, we never shut people up in cupboards. Well, because they don't like it. Oh, yes, you do like Peggy. She's a dear little girl. What do you mean she's puggy? Oh, she's got puggy hands. Well, you don't have to hold her hand, do you? Well, just let go. Well, have you tried asking her nicely to let you go? Well, if she won't let you go... Well, Dickie, you'll just have to work it out. I mean, life is like that. Oh, thank you, Hazel, dear. You are my helper, aren't you? Thank you for getting Betty into her little zip jacket. Now, just zip her up once. Don't undo it again. No, never, dear. You can't have a turn. No, children, you can't all zip Betty. Now, leave her alone. Joni, when we have been to the little room next door, what do? We pull our knickers up again. Leave her in early training.
Even when they're at the nursery school stage, the conscientious parent is faced with a choice in the sort of education he intends for his children. Is he content with the state system, or has he got some money which he wants to spend on private schools? If the latter, he has to start investigating the private schools, reading all the prospectuses. Here is one from Charles Dickens's Nicholas Nickleby.
Education. At Mr. Wackford Squeers Academy, Do the Boys Hall at the delightful village of Do the Boys near Greta Bridge in Yorkshire, youth are boarded, clothed, booked, furnished with pocket money, provided with all necessaries, instructed in all languages, living and dead, mathematics, orthography, geometry, astronomy, trigonometry, the use of the globes, algebra, single stick, if required, writing, arithmetic, fortification, and every other branch of classical literature. Terms, 20 guineas per annum, no extras, no vacations, and diet unparalleled.
Now that's what I call a good school prospectus. If you remember, Mr. Wackford Squeers made his money by starving and beating the boys to death. I like the bit about diet unparalleled. School food is one of the oldest educational jokes. Do you remember all those terrible schoolboy slang descriptions? Tapioca was frog spawn. Those stewed apple was toenail pudding. And there's that laxative dried fruit, which is known inexplicably to me as mixed bathing. Fortunately, school food has improved minimally over the years. At least they do have stricter hygiene regulations. Here's a report from the Daily Express.
Corned beef was sent to a Bridgend school canteen. Teachers sniffed it and did not like it. A canteen manageress sniffed it but pronounced it good. The town sanitary inspector sniffed it and passed it as good. The town medical officer sniffed it and declared it good, then ordered it to be destroyed because too many people had sniffed it.
Marvellous example of officialdom at work, isn't it? Doing it well, too. Discipline is essential in schools, but you have to be careful. Here's an extract from a speech published in the Newcastle Journal.
Capital punishment applied to the wrong type of child, the nervous, sensitive type, may do irreparable harm.
Capital punishment. Nowadays, even corporal punishment is frowned on. But corporal punishment has a long history. It was certainly in use in those days when Frederick W. Farrar wrote Eric or Little by Little, that classic moral school story. At one point, Eric Williams, the hero, is caned for a crime he did not commit.
The punishment was most severe, and for some weeks after there were dark wheels visible across Eric's palm, which rendered the use of his hands painful. Poor Williams, said Duncan as they went out of school, how very plucky of you not to cry. Vengeance deep brooding o'er the cane had locked the source of deeper woe. and burning pride and high disdain forbade the gentler tear to flow, said Eric with a smile.
Never lost for a quatrain to smile through was our Eric. Actually, it's not all plain sailing for Eric at Roslyn School. I'm afraid he goes rather to the bad. So much so that later in the book, when Eric goes out walking with his friend Russell, one of the masters ignores him.
What a surly devil that is, said Eric, when he passed. Did you see how he purposely cut me? A surly? Oh, Eric, that's the first time I've ever heard you swear, said Russell.
Pretty strong meat, that book. Of course, when boys get together at school, habits like swearing are bound to develop. It seems hardly surprising that some parents would rather leave it all to the school and hope that there's a stern disciplinarian in charge when the children return after their holidays.
Well, boys, I'm delighted to welcome you all back for a new term, and I hope it'll be a very happy and successful one for you all. Who did that? I'm waiting. I have no intention of continuing until the boy who did that owns up. If the boy who did that does not own up, I shall be forced to continue. Very well, I shall continue. I would like to welcome four new members of the staff this term, but I could only get two. Mr. Jones, who is a grammar school man, though none the worse for that, stop laughing, will be taking the middle school in all the footling little subjects that nobody else wants to teach. And I'm sure that he will be an invaluable member of the staff. And in time, a valuable one. And if I catch any boys laughing at Mr. Jones' deformity, I shall punish them. Even if it is funny. Oh, and Chaplin, there's a broken window in the changing room. Mend that, please. It's part of your job. And Watson, get your hair cut. Now, second, in place of Monsieur Boireno, our late French teacher, we have engaged Mr. Mboko. Now, this will be the first time that our syllabus has included Swahili. But we hope to resume French again next term. Incidentally, some of you boys may be interested to know that until last week, Mr. Mboko was Prime Minister of Chad. And on weekday mornings, he will teach the sixth form Swahili. And on weekday afternoons, they will teach him English. Watson, go and get your hair cut again. Next, carpentry. Stop laughing. Stop laughing! Carpentry will be taken more seriously this term. In fact, I want the gymnasium finished by March. And Mr. Carter will be coming out from the town to take carpentry this term, and I want to silence this nasty rumour that he is an escaped convict. Has, in fact, served his sentence. Now, many of you will have already heard the tragic news about Newton, our dear faithful old retainer. He fell to his death early yesterday morning, from his bed. Poor dear old Newton. And I'm giving the second form the entire morning off school in his memory. Get the spades from me and the body from Matron.
John Cleese. However, some teachers find keeping order a major problem. They are the ones who get practical jokes played on them. I heard of rather a good one, new to me. How about you, Alfred? Apparently what you do is you paint a female nude on the blackboard with quick-drying white paint. And then you draw the clothes on in chalk, you see. And the master comes in, wipes the wall with a duster and does a striptease for the class. Very sophisticated the children are nowadays. As regards methods of keeping order, here's an example from Evelyn Waugh's Decline and Fall. The hero, Paul Pennyfeather, goes to his first lesson as a teacher at a rather seedy private school, Clanabar Castle. After struggling to control the wayward boys, Paul achieves total silence quite simply.
You will all write an essay on self-indulgence. there will be a prize of 0.5 crown for the longest essay, irrespective of any possible merit.
Evelyn Waugh described a rather dodgy sort of private school, but they weren't all like that. Our great public schools were the breeding ground of the aristocracy. The American humorist H. Allen Smith once wrote that the Battle of Yorktown was lost on the playing fields of Eton. But in a way, and in their time, there was something splendid about the old Victorian public school spirit, the concept of honour and gentlemanliness, and the strange confusion of sport and war, as if cricket matches decided the fate of nations and battles were just friendlies. The feeling summed up in the famous poem by Sir Henry Newbolt, Vitiae Lampada.
There's a breathless hush in the close tonight. 10 to make and the match to win, a bumping pitch and a blinding light, an hour to play and the last man in. And it's not for the sake of a ribboned coat or the selfish hope of a season's fame, but his captain's hand on his shoulder smote. Play up, and play the game. The sand of the desert is sodden red, red with the wreck of a square that broke. The Gatling's jammed and the colonel dead, and the regiment blind with the dust and smoke. The river of death has brimmed its banks, and England's far, and honour a name. But the voice of a schoolboy rallies the ranks. Play up! Play up! And play the game!
Smaller radio award for that, I think, later in the year. But though the development of character was a major part of the school's work, it isn't all of it. There's also the business of putting knowledge into young heads, what can be forced past the natural barriers. The school's effectiveness in doing this is tested in public examinations and nowadays in interminable school quiz programmes.
And at the halfway stage, the score is the boys of King Arthur's Grammar School Newquay 1.5, the girls of Podbury High School Bratwich 0.
And now, round 7. Tell the difference. Peter, what is the difference between an elephant and an armchair?
Well, an elephant is one of those round orange boxes you lock books up in and put in a greenhouse. And an armchair is, it's a long plastic pole. It's a long plastic pole you hang out the window to keep the birds away.
No. I can only give you a half for that, Peter. Now, round 56 is called, what would you do with A?
Feed it to the horses.
No, I'm afraid not, Adam. What I mean is, what would you do with a something, you see? So, Penryn, what would you do with a wombat?
Play womb with it.
Yes, good. That's 4 marks to you, Penryn.
William, what would you do with a titfur?
Well, you'd string it and you'd cut over.
No, I'm afraid not, William. Jolly good shot. But you would, in fact, wear it on your head. It is a kind of boot. And that, I'm afraid, is the end of the contest. And Joan Shark, the final score, please.
Well, the score at the end of the contest is the boys of King Arthur's Grammar School Newquay 6, the girls of Podbury High School 4.
So that is, of course, a win for the boys and girls of Eton College. And there we are. So it's over to the team captains to say goodbye for us.
Well, I'd like to thank the boys of King Arthur's Grammar School very much for a most exciting contest and say that we're ready to meet them in the gym after lock-up.
The Cambridge Circus Review strikes again. Of course, the schoolmaster takes the place of the pupil's family during school hours. He is in loco parentis, in English, like a crazy parent. And it's his concern to look after the... Hurry up, come on. And it's his concern to look after the moral welfare of his charges. Books used to be censored quite considerably for schools. There were special editions of many of the classics. Here's an extract from the Scottish Community Drama Association's bulletin.
A school edition of Macbeth in use in the Midlands of England, changes Shakespeare's Enter a Bloody Sergeant to Enter a Bleeding Captain.
Utter collapse of Eric's friend. Parents are sometimes very grateful to school teachers for saving them the embarrassment of explaining the facts of life. Sex is a subject which, in most schools, comes under the heading of religious instruction. It is often dealt with in confirmation classes.
Now, Foster, here at St. Onan's, I generally try and make this last confirmation class of the series more of a personal chat than a theological thing.
Yes, sir.
Look, Foster, we've been through the 39 articles together. We know each other pretty well. I don't want to go on calling you Foster. What's your nickname? What do the other boys call you?
Knitbag, sir.
Yes. Well, Foster, what I want to tackle now is this problem of your body.
Yes, sir.
Now, your body is laid out on fairly simple, straightforward sort of lines, isn't it? You've got your two arms and your two legs, and there's that valiant work of the heart and his two stout cronies, the lungs. It's all pretty straightforward.
Yes, sir.
Yes. And here we come to the crux. You're not embarrassed about this, are you, Foster? I mean, there is absolutely no need to be embarrassed about it. You're a bright, observant sort of lad. You've probably noticed, as you've been getting into your togs or slipping into your little gym jams, that when you get down here, things aren't straightforward at all.
Yes, sir.
And you've probably wondered how it is that God, who by and large made such a splendid job of the rest of your little body, made such a bosh shot at that particular bit. Yes. Well, I agree with you. But you see, God, whatever else he is, and of course he is everything else, he's not a fool. It's not pretty, but it was put there for a purpose. Point taken, Foster?
Yes, sir.
Good, good. Well, I hope that clears up any doubts you might have on that side. Don't go, Foster. I know you're a bit of a scallywag. Probably anything I say to you will just go up one trouser leg and down the other. But that particular piece of apparatus that we've been discussing is called your private parts. They're called that for a reason. It's not that they're anything to be ashamed of. They're not, though. They're not anything to be proud of, either. No, they're called that because they're yours, and they're yours alone. And you should keep them to yourself. And if anyone else touches you there, that person is wicked. And no matter who it is, you must say to him, "That belongs to me, and you've no right to touch it."
That belongs to me, and you've no right to touch it.
Doesn't apply to me, Foster.
Alan Bennett. Alan Bennett. Well, there we are. No more Latin, no more French, no more sitting on the old school bench. Eric and Alfred and I have left school, and I hope you'll join us next week when Alfred Marks and I are going into medicine. Until then, goodbye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Education was produced by Simon Brett and Bob Oliver Rogers.